Word of mouth.
Word of mouth.
Word of
mouth.
This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Virginia Prescott. Donald Trump's candidacy, conduct, and communication style are historically unprecedented. So the announcement that his wife, Melania, will not move directly into the White House after inauguration, and that his daughter, Ivanka, will have an office there, and that family members may sit in on cabinet meetings was not entirely surprising, and as it turns out, not unparalleled. Brady Carlson is Word of Mouth's presidential historian and author of Dead Presidents, joining us now from Wisconsin Public Radio to talk about presidential kids past who've worked in the White House. Brady, great to have you back.
Happy New Year, Virginia.
Well, Happy New Year to you. Of course, our democracy was based on this idea of rejecting power based on lineage. So did the framers address familial roles?
Well, they did it mostly through custom. I mean, they certainly were trying to avoid any comparisons to a monarchy, but because they were turning to the man who had the most civic virtue of anyone, George Washington, to be the first president of the United States, they left it up to him, saying he's going to have enough propriety to keep things on the up and up. George Washington, in fact, once considered adding a line to, I think it was his inaugural address, pointing out that he had no one to bequeath his job to since he had no children. He decided in the end maybe that wasn't the manliest phrase he could put into his speech, so he left it out. But it was this idea that he needed to make it clear that this was a job that was entrusted to a person, not something that a person could hand down. That said, we have had plenty of powerful political families in the United States. We've had the Bushes, the Tafts, the Roosevelts, the Clintons, and some of those families have put more than one of their members in or close to the White House.
Has there ever, though, been a law against nepotism?
Yes. In fact, there's one on the books now. It says, and I'll just quote it, a public official may not appoint, employ, promote, advance, or advocate for appointment, employment, promotion, or advancement in or to a civilian position in the agency in which he is serving or over which he exercises jurisdiction or control any individual who is a relative of the public official. And it specifies that the president is one of those officials who's not supposed to appoint relatives to any position that he or she controls. Now, some scholars point out that the Constitution outlines the president's powers to appoint, and that might actually trump the federal law. That was passed in 1967, and the story that's always been told about it was that it was passed in the aftermath of John F. Kennedy's assassination to keep out, say, his brother, Bobby Kennedy, who had served as his attorney general, and the then president at the time, Lyndon Johnson, didn't exactly get along with Bobby Kennedy. So it was kind of a way to twist the knife in their long-running feud.
Well, that was a brother, Bobby Kennedy and JFK. But how about kids? Are there kids who have worked for their father, since, of course, it was always fathers?
Yes. The most prominent example would be John Quincy Adams. He was one of John Adams' sons, and he had been promising to the point that when John Adams would travel for the many positions he held in the early days of the United States, that he would bring John Quincy along with him. Later, after he had studied at Harvard and sort of grown up, President George Washington named John Quincy Adams minister to the Netherlands at the time that his father, John Adams, was serving as vice president. Now, that in and of itself doesn't suggest nepotism necessarily, but John Adams did, when he was elected president, sent his son to represent the U.S. in Prussia. So he did give his son a government job. To be fair, John Quincy Adams was highly qualified and was an extremely talented diplomat. He would then go on to serve as Secretary of State and would later be elected president himself. In fact, one of the most qualified, if not the most qualified person ever elected president. There have been other examples over the years. Most of the time when a president's son or daughter works for a president, it's in a role of kind of like a private secretary or an aide, not necessarily an official job title. One example is President Rutherford B. Hayes' son, Webb, who was his father's private secretary in the White House. He would go on to become kind of an amazing and unheralded American figure. He was a prominent businessman and then decided to give all of that up to become a soldier. and had become kind of, his exploits are kind of fun and kind of wild to read about. Imagine a CEO leaving the boardroom and then becoming kind of a soldier of fortune, almost an Indiana Jones type. He would go on to win the Medal of Honor and have some really thrilling exploits. Then after he retired, he went on to build a presidential library. It was the first public presidential library.
Okay, so that's Webb Hayes, Rutherford B. Hayes' son. Have there been others like John Quincy Adams, who of course became president, who went on to other government roles?
Yeah, I would say the most prominent example of that is not necessarily a government role, but a military role. Theodore Roosevelt Jr. Imagine being Theodore Roosevelt Jr., right? I mean, that, in fact, he would speak oftentimes about, there's no way that a person in my position could ever live up to his name with a father like Theodore Roosevelt. But he did give it a great try. He was in the military. He fought in a number of wars and ended up as a brigadier general in World War II. In fact, he was the first general to land during D-Day. He was on Utah Beach. Is this 57-year-old man standing there on the beach, directing troops with his cane and really rallying people to move toward the German positions. The thing is, he was literally having a heart attack at the time and it wound up dying about a month later. Omar Bradley, who is another famous World War II general, was asked, what was the most heroic thing you saw in the war? And he answered immediately, he said, Theodore Roosevelt at Utah Beach.
Wow. We've talked so far about sons, but there have been some particularly strong bonds between presidents and daughters, some even serving almost in a first lady-like capacity, as it's suspected Ivanka Trump might.
Just by way of context, it's not necessarily strange for someone other than the president's wife to serve as first lady. I mean, an example of that goes back to when Thomas Jefferson was president. His wife had died years before he was elected. So his daughter would sometimes serve as the social hostess of the White House. Sometimes his friend James Madison's wife, Dolly, who became the model for the position that eventually became called First Lady, would fill in and serve that. And a number of presidents had been in similar situations. So it's not necessarily an unusual thing, though it is less usual in modern times. Really, since Eleanor Roosevelt, the job of First Lady has been more formalized. The First Lady has her own staff and things like that. But really, like anything else surrounding the president, the role of what it's like to be a presidential family member is something we've been sorting out over time. A great example of a daughter who was influential or played an important role in a presidency was Franklin Roosevelt's daughter, Anna. Now, Franklin Roosevelt had Eleanor Roosevelt as his first lady, and she was off traveling the country and really had her own career, her own sphere of influence. But inside the White House, Anna Roosevelt was often seen as the go-to person. If you needed to get to the president, she was the intermediary. She didn't have a formal role. She wasn't the president's secretary or an aide or anything like that. She was really just off the books in a way. But in the last few years of his presidency, she was as involved in his day-to-day affairs as pretty much anyone else.
We're talking with Brady Carlson. He's author of the book Dead Presidents and our, let's say, presidential historian. We're talking about some of the roles that first family members have played historically in other presidencies. Brady, we're talking about some family members, sons, daughters, who have served their fathers during their presidency. Others who have not had such a cozy relationship with dad in the White House?
Yeah, others have had a hard time figuring out if my dad is the president. You know, that's sort of like having a supernova in your life, this immense figure who is the center of attention everywhere he goes. And how do you develop your own identity when you've got that in your life? In recent years, some of Ronald Reagan's children were growing up in public, so to speak, and would sometimes say oppose their own father's policies in the news while he was in office. Some of Ronald Reagan's kids were growing up in public in a way when he was president and were sometimes, say, publicly at odds with his positions while he was president. And then George H.W. Bush, who was Reagan's successor, the government sued his son Neil and Neil's company during the savings and loan crisis. That was while Bush was president. He said as a father it was difficult, but as a president it wasn't something he was going to be involved with because he was going to steer clear of that. But you have to think that was pretty awkward.
Right. Do you have a favorite presidential spawn?
It has to be Alice Roosevelt, Theodore Roosevelt's oldest daughter, who
so
was...
So glad you said that. I've read about her. She just sounds like quite a character.
Well, I mean, this comes back to that idea of how do you become yourself when you've got a president for a father? And Alice succeeded beyond anyone's expectation. She just said, I'm going to do what I want. I mean, all of the Roosevelt kids were pretty wild. They were running all over the place and were bringing exotic pets into the White House. Alice had a snake. That was her contribution. But she would smoke on the roof of the White House and she would liven up parties. If she thought things were getting kind of dull, she would just fire a pistol into the air to wake people up. And after the Roosevelts left the White House, she stayed in Washington, D.C. She had married a prominent politician at the time and became sort of the go-to political slash social figure for decades. She cultivated presidents and famous politicians and famous people and became just sort of a quotable person. There was a funny moment once where Lyndon Johnson came to see her and in her later years, Alice Roosevelt would wear this big hat and Johnson, who was president at the time, said, you know, when you're wearing that hat, Alice, it makes it hard for me to give you a kiss. She goes, Mr. President, why do you think I wear it? Her famous saying, of course, she loved political gossip, and her famous saying was, if you don't have anything nice to say about someone, sit right here by me. That's sort of the most famous Alice quote. And she lived into her 90s and had, even by American political standards, an incredibly unique life.
So though she was unique, it is not so singular for the child of a president to serve close to him. But I really can't help but wonder what the framers would think of someone called Barron living in the White House.
It is such an interesting question, isn't it? I mean, the presidency itself has changed in so many ways from what was originally envisioned by the framers. They really thought of it as a sort of a CEO job. That was the person who's going to implement things that the really powerful people, Congress, did. And it wasn't necessarily going to be the fixture of American political life that it has become. And not just in political terms either. I mean, the president is a cultural figure as much as he is a political figure. There's so much then that comes with that. I mean, you have exhibits at the Smithsonian about the dresses that the wives of presidents wear, and you have books written about what the children of presidents do, not necessarily because they're doing anything that the rest of us don't do, but because their dad is the president. And so that becomes a component of our cultural life in a really interesting way. But I think to the broader question, since Barron can mean multiple things, what about having a real estate Barron as the next president? And that's going to be an interesting question. You know, the people who don't like the president-elect say that he's a demagogue and that the framers tried to build a system to block demagogues from becoming president. Then again, a lot of people can point to the new president's wealth and say, well, George Washington was the first president and at the time was probably the richest or close to the richest man in America. So look, our political system is full of surprises and it's going to be interesting to see how this surprise plays out.
It is indeed. And Brady, we'll keep turning to you. Thank you very much for speaking with us.
My pleasure.
Brady Carlson, he is a host and reporter for Wisconsin Public Radio and author of Dead Presidents, an American adventure into the strange deaths and surprising afterlives of our nation's leaders. Much more on the book at our website, wordofmouthradio.org.